Fruit McGill, reporting in from the spaceport. I'm alive, and requesting extraction.
McGill? It figures. What are you doing alive down there?
Defending the spaceport, sir, as ordered.
We lost that battle, McGill. Didn't anyone tell you?
The Nabs tried to. I couldn't talk them out of it, even at the point of a gun.
Graves was silent for several seconds. I thought he might start screaming at me, but he didn't. He chuckled instead. I could not recall ever having heard him laugh before.
You're some piece of work, McGill. I'm getting something over the exec channel about the Nerbs, something about a formal charge. Would that be your doing?
I did my best, sir.
You've got a brass bear, kid. All right. I'm recalling you right now.
When is the lifter due?
What lifter? I haven't got the time or resources for a lifter.
Well, then what?
I began, but trailed off. The channel was dead. I couldn't raise him again. I stood around after that, watching the suns rise. I figured maybe Graves had an air car of his own or some other conveyance. I was wrong. The missile caught the corner of my eye. I barely had time to turn my head and face it. Streaking right down from orbit, it must have been riding my signal all the way from space. I had only a second or two to even realize what it was. The contrail. The tiny glimmer of fire. They blew me up. One second I was standing there on the rugged surface of steel world, soaking up the harsh rays of the Cankri dawn, and the next, I was broken down into my component atoms. I hadn't even tried to run or seek shelter. What would have been the point? I had been recalled to Corvus the hard way.
Chapter 33. I emerged from the revival unit dizzy and confused. In my mind, the missile was still coming down. That moment in which I'd realized what Graves had done was still fresh in my head.
That prick,
I mumbled, struggling to open my eyes.
What have we got?
Asked a voice. The voice was female, and I thought I recognized it, but I wasn't completely sure.
Stats are good, no toxins, no warping. I think we have a good grow this time.
We'd better.
A good grow. Such strange words. They echoed through my mind, bringing waves of relief. For the last few days I'd been haunted by the specter of a damaged body. It had been like being told you had a fatal dose of radiation or cancer, or both. My elation slowly shifted back into anger. I'd worked so hard to stay alive. What was the point of all that desperate effort if Graves was just going to blow me up at the end? With a growl of animal intensity, I tried to get off the tray they had me on. The tray was like a tongue sticking out of the mouth-like opening of the revival unit. When I tried to get up, I bumped my head on the upper manifold.
"What was that?"
asked an orderly.
"Was that a muscle spasm?"
"Sort of. He's trying to get up,"
said the female. I recognized her now. Anne Grant. The last time she had revived me illegally.
"Remarkable," said the orderly.
"McGill always has ideas of his own."
I found a strap around my waist, holding me onto the tray. Fumbling blindly, I managed to get the buckle off and half fell, half rolled onto the ground. For the first time, my eyes fluttered open. I struggled to speak.
"Specialist Grant," I said, slurring my words.
"Anne, is that you?"
"Yes, James. I'm here.
Help me up. I've got to get up and move out."
"Where are you headed?"
"The battle is over, recruit."
"Not for me,"
I said, finally getting to my feet with help from both of them. They had my elbows on either side.
"I'm on a mission.
I'm going to kill Centurion Graves.
That caused them both to chuckle.
You are not the first to awaken with that thought firmly in mind, you know.
Let go of me, I demanded. They did it, and I was immediately sorry. I fell to my knees without their support to steady me. Dying and coming back to life is a strange experience. I can say with certainty I've never gotten used to the process. It's kind of like awakening from a week-long coma. You're disoriented, weak, and usually pissed off in my case. Specialist Grant knelt beside me. I was on all fours, panting.
Would it help if I told you Graves is pretty happy with you? He's talking about awarding you a silver nova.
I looked at her with bleary eyes. She was pretty, but it was as if I was looking at her underwater.
A medal? Why? Valor? Success? The usual thing?
Ah, I said, and tried to get to my feet again. I cursed and raved and pushed their hands away. Struggling to stand, I did it on my own this time. I was getting stronger, more coordinated. I sucked in a gust of air. My chest felt tight and my new lungs burned. I guess it was their very first deep breath. I endured a coughing fit, then looked at both of them.
I need a uniform.
After a few minutes, I was dressed and able to stand, unaided, without looking like a Saturday night drunk. "Can I talk to you privately for a second?" I asked Anne. She nodded at the orderly who disappeared. "Is this regrow legit?" I asked her when he was gone. "No half-rotted brew of plasma, no bad grows?"
"That's right. You're as good as you've ever been."
"Do they really stamp a number in your cells?" I asked her.
"What?
A counter? You know, to identify you and indicate how many times you've been regrown?"
"Oh,"
she said. Her face looked troubled.
"How did you hear about that? We're not supposed to talk about it."
"The Nerbs told me." Anne shook her head and laughed.
"How do you get into these things, recruit?"
"I have a gift." "What about your people, the Bio-Squad? Are you guys going to leave me alone now?"
"I heard you had a little trouble with some of my colleagues after you managed to lose and then destroy a revival machine. Do you know how much those things cost? I think they want to forget about you."
"No charges, then?" She shook her head.
"Prosecution wouldn't be wise for the Legion. You're a hero now."
I pushed off the wall I'd been leaning against. I could stand comfortably now. In an hour or two, I knew I'd be as good as new. Literally. I adjusted my kit in a streaked mirror hung near the door. The door sensed I was thinking about leaving and intelligently swished open.
"McGill,"
Anne called as I turned to leave. I looked back at her.
"Try not to make any new enemies, okay? I put in some good words for you. But you will always need us. When you are at your worst, your weakest, we'll be there. That's not when you want to see the face of an enemy."
I nodded.
"Thanks for the warning," I said.
"Tell your colleagues that when the lizards break in and start eating everyone in the bunker, that's when you need my people." It wasn't my most diplomatic speech, but she didn't seem to be offended by it. In fact, she seemed to like my new, uncompromising attitude. She smiled faintly as I left. Putting one boot in front of the other as I walked down the long, long corridors of Corvus felt like a journey of countless miles, but it only took a few minutes. When I reached Centurion Graves's office, I put my hand on the key plate and it opened immediately. Graves must have said it to recognize me and let me in.
"Ah, there you are, McGill,"
he said. He wore a twist of the lips I didn't recognize at first. He was smiling with half his mouth. I couldn't recall ever having seen him smile before. I stepped into the office and had a look around.
Almost everything was steel, but there were skins on the walls. Big ones. I couldn't make out a single species. They were mostly gray or mottled brown, but there was a black one as shiny and curved as a beetle's back. In fact, that's what I thought it was. The shell of a huge insect. I wondered where Graves had gotten them all.
"Admiring my collection?" the centurion asked. "You'll have one of your own someday, if you keep up the good work."
I rotated my neck, slowly, taking it all in. "I don't know why you're happy with my performance, sir," I said.
"Because you did what no one else could do. You won the day."
"That's not what the Narbs told me. They said we'd lost the challenge. The Saurians won, unless they changed their minds." He shook his head vigorously.
"That never, ever happens. Once a Narb makes up his mind and makes a judgment call, they don't reverse it."
I frowned. "Then we've been kicked off the planet? We lost the contract here and the neighboring worlds?"
"Not at all. Sure, we lost the battle, but we won where it counts. In fact, you won for us."
"I understand you're happy with my performance, even if you have a strange way of demonstrating it. But I have no idea what you're talking about."
"The revival units, of course. The Narbs checked the imprints, and you were right. It's all in their report."
"But, sir, if we've lost the battle..." He lifted up a single finger and held it near his face.
"Yes, we lost the key battle. But we won Steel World by forfeit. Sheer genius on your part. Surely you can't stand there and tell me you have no idea what you've done."
I was baffled. But it's in my nature to bluff it through in situations like this. Just ask my parents and professors. "Of course I know what I did. I gave them the evidence. I showed them that the lizards were using revival technology. But the Narb said it didn't matter since we were using it too."
"Ah, I see," said Graves. "At that point you felt you must have failed. Well, you didn't. You see, the Narbs don't just do body counts. They check into every detail, every nook and cranny. They found a violation that disqualified the Saurians."
"A violation? You mean they cheated?"
"Worse," Graves said excitedly. "They violated patent laws. The Narbs investigated and demanded to see their revival units and the receipts for their purchase. There was no paperwork, no licensing, nothing. The Saurians pirated the tech. They probably got hold of one of the units and copied it as best they could. We now suspect that they wanted our revival unit not only to deprive us of its use, but to study it and copy its advanced design."
I was finally beginning to get it. We'd lost, but the Saurians had been declared cheaters. They'd broken galactic law and been disqualified. We'd won by forfeit. But I was still mad about being blown up arbitrarily. "I still fail to see why you had to kill me after my victory. If I'm a hero, didn't I warrant a pickup?" Graves twisted his face into a look of disgust.
"Such whining. I hadn't expected to hear this from you, McGill. We're grown-ups in this Legion. We fight, we die, and then we fight again. It's no big deal. Besides, I was told you were operating on a bad grow. You should be happy to have a fully functional body again."
"I still don't see why..."
"Suck it up, McGill. We won the war, and you helped materially in achieving that goal. That's the job of every soldier in this Legion. What do you want, a parade? Flowers?"
"Flowers would be nice, yes." Graves snorted and shook his head. I could tell there weren't going to be any flowers. Somehow, however, his attitude made me less upset. In his eyes, I was being a baby. Right or wrong, it helped me to understand that. I had to wonder how many times he'd died, how many years he'd fought for Legion Varus,
and how many hard decisions he'd had to make. For the first time since I'd been revived, a ghostly smile appeared on my lips. I realized I should be basking in the light of victory, and I felt better. "So it wasn't all for nothing," I said, musing.
"Certainly not. We still hold the contract to this world and all its neighbors. The work of Legion Varus is never easy, but we always get the job done."
I looked at him and frowned again. "But, sir, did you really have to launch a missile and blow me up?"
Graves huffed and shook his head. "You sound like Harris. Really, McGill, as a heavily equipped legionnaire on our next campaign, you shouldn't be so sentimentally attached to the corpse you happen to be residing in at the moment. It's unseemly."
"Heavily equipped? I'm going to be a heavy trooper with armor?"
"Not just that. Every recruit is considered for advancement to heavy equipment after their first campaign. No, I'm recommending you for training as a weaponeer. I've reviewed the reports, and I was impressed by your improvisation with the equipment."
I stared at him for a moment. Internally, I was thinking that it hadn't been all that impressive. All I'd done was use the plasma tube as a reptile tongue depressor. But when you're being promoted, it's best not to downplay your accomplishments.
"Nothing to say, McGill?"
Graves asked stiffly.
"You've been honored, man. Congratulations."
I really didn't know what to say for a moment, but then I had it.
"Thank you, sir."
Those words didn't come easily for me. I could still see that missile arcing down to obliterate my body, and I still felt the twinge of that sick feeling left over from knowing I was about to die. Again. Chapter 34. When I finally reached my quarters on Deck 9, I was attacked from behind. Hands grabbed my elbow. Whoever my assailant was, I considered this opening move to be a mistake. I stopped, planted my right foot, and threw myself backward into him. I felt him fall back. Before we even hit the deck, I drove my elbow into a hard gut. It was unarmored, but muscular enough. My attacker grunted and wheezed. The hands released me. I rolled to my feet, ready to fight. In my mind, I suspected the bio people trying to finish their work before too many officers got used to seeing me around the ship again. But when I looked down, I saw Carlos rolling around and groaning. He had his hands over his belly.
"Great way to greet a comrade," he said.
"You should know better than to grab a soldier from behind. Don't you know I was fighting for my life with an army of lizards an hour ago?"
"Yeah, a bad call, I admit."
I helped him up, and he recovered quickly.
"I wanted to surprise you," he said.
"You achieved your goal." He laughed, and we walked into our quarters. I was surprised to see no one was there. No one except Natasha. I smiled when I saw her. She'd put on a little makeup or done her hair or something. I wasn't sure what it was, but she no longer looked like one more grunt in the squad.
"Where is everyone?"
"Special request from above," Carlos said, grinning. "You've got the place to yourselves."
He closed the door behind us, and I looked around in surprise. The barracks were usually pretty crowded. We kept it dark at night, as per regulations, but there was rarely much in the way of privacy. If two people wanted to be intimate, finding a spot for it was always a challenge. Natasha was still smiling at me. She looked down shyly when I returned her stare. I walked forward and took her hand.
"Is this your idea?"
I asked her.
"Yeah, sort of. It was everyone's idea."
"What's the occasion?"
"You know what you did. You beat the Saurians, single-handedly, if you listen to Carlos."
"Hardly," I said. "I was just in the right place at the right time. Or the wrong place at the wrong time, depending on how you look at it."
"But that's not why I'm here," she said. "I'm here because they tell me I would have been permed if it wasn't for you. You went down that tunnel and found those lizards and got my data back. I've got a new body because of you.
I smiled. That part was true, and I didn't try to deny it. I like this kind of gratitude much better than the variety Graves dishes out, I said. We talked quietly for a time, and I told her she didn't have to do anything she didn't want to. But we got around to it in the end. When I was drifting off to sleep, the rest of the squad returned to the barracks and filed in. They made jokes and tossed pillows at us, but I barely cared. At roll call the next day, I was ordered out of line. Veteran Harris trotted away, and I followed him double time. I wondered what this was all about. Foolishly, I thought perhaps I was in line for another accolade of some kind. The last two surprises had been good ones. What was next? I was disappointed when he turned and headed for Blue Deck. I called for him to halt and talk. He ignored me and didn't stop until we were left waiting for a lift. Veteran, I don't think it's a good idea for me to get close to the bio people right now.
Pissed them off bad, didn't you, kid?
Yes, sir, I really did.
He chuckled. Serves them right, those self-important ghouls. But this is out of my hands now. The brass is up there waiting for you, including the Primus. They've lodged some kind of complaint.
What should I do, Vet?
He shrugged. I don't know. Maybe you could ram a big gun into her face like you did with the lizard down planetside.
Harris laughed then, and I failed to join in his amusement. I decided to play it cool and dumb. I'd see how far that got me, then I'd go for evasiveness. As I thought over these moves in the elevator, I felt my heart sink. This wasn't going to be an easy crowd to fool. I stepped past the guards, orderlies, and bio-specialists. As I passed by, everyone who saw me stopped talking and stared. They didn't grind their teeth, but there was a certain cold curiosity in their eyes. I was a patient who'd stepped beyond the accepted boundaries. I was not one of them, and somehow I knew I never would be. I was led into a quiet conference room with muted light and a very high ceiling. I realized I didn't have any weapons with me. I glanced over to Veteran Harris, checking out his sidearm. He noticed this with that extrasensory perception of his, and coughed. When his hand came down from his mouth, it came to rest on the butt of his pistol. To me, the message was clear, even though our eyes did not meet. I wasn't going to get his weapon away from him. Primus Turov herself stared at me coldly. Her hands were steepled, and she had that same look on her face that she'd had when she'd ordered me to be permed before. Somehow I knew she'd never liked me since that day. I was an aberration, a walking, talking dead man. She'd passed judgment upon me, and I'd somehow evaded it. I could tell by her cold, dead eyes that she intended to fix that error. To her right sat Centurion Graves. He didn't look happy or upset. His face was stone, but I was happy to see him there, as I thought he had to be in my corner. He'd argued on my behalf before, and right now I really needed a friend among the officers. The last face present was the least pleasant of the bunch. It was none other than Bio-Centurion Thompson, the queen of all James McGill haters. I wondered if she'd somehow begun to remember the details of her murder, or if others had put it together for her. She was my real enemy in this room. I was sure of that much.
"This conference is now in session," the Primus announced.
I stood at attention at the end of the oval conference table. No one had invited me or Harris to take a seat. I stared at the wall above the officers' heads, tried to look cool, and hoped for the best.
"James McGill," she said officiously. "You stand charged of murder. Again. But this time your victim was human and an officer. How do you plead?"
"I'm sorry, Primus," I said. "Who am I accused of murdering?" With a nod, she indicated Centurion Thompson, who was doing her best to burn me to ash with her eyes.
I'm sorry, but I must plead not guilty.
On what grounds?
The centurion interjected, earning herself a frown from the primus, which she seemed to miss entirely.
Grounds, sir? You're sitting right here, clearly alive and well.
Graves cleared his throat.
Murder is still possible, despite the revival of the victim. If the act was performed, justice must be served.
I was beginning to feel heat rising in a ring around my neck. I wanted to open my shirt, but I remained stock still.
May I receive counsel?
I asked. Graves and the primus exchanged glances.
This is a military proceeding, Graves said. We're following hegemony law, subservient to galactic law. I'm acting as your counsel, and the primus is the final arbiter.
This didn't fill me with confidence. I quickly glanced from one of them to the other. None of their faces had an ounce of sympathy in them. With Graves, I knew that didn't mean he wasn't pulling for me. He was as expressionless as a lizard most of the time.
Is self-defense permissible as a defense?
I asked.
It is, Graves answered.
Then I claim self-defense,
I said as calmly as I could.
The centurion attempted to use deadly force on me, and I responded in kind.
You don't have any evidence,
complained the bio. I finally looked at her.
I have two witnesses, the orderlies. I looked up their names and contacted them last night. They know what was in that syringe. They know who had the skill to prepare such a dose of poison and who didn't.
This took her by surprise. She opened her mouth, then closed it again.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I was, of course, bluffing. I hadn't contacted anyone. I'd been lying low, hoping this would all be swept under the rug. But she didn't know that. Graves leaned in for the kill, staring coldly at the bio-centurion.
A syringe? You claimed you were strangled. We'll have to have an inquest.
No,
she said suddenly, dropping her eyes.
That won't be necessary. I'll drop the charges if he does.
Graves nodded approvingly.
Very adult of you. Under battlefield conditions, I've found many people lose their sense of judgment and proportion.
She looked pissed, but nodded. Graves now seemed slightly pleased, but not the primus. She was annoyed. That's when I knew Turov was still gunning for me.
There is another issue, she said. You, James McGill, are supposed to be dead.
Everyone in Legion Varus dies now and again, I said, quoting Graves. It's part of the job.
That may very well be. But they aren't often executed for violating galactic law.
Our eyes met, and I knew there was no love lost in this woman. She was still upset that Graves had revived me.
What's done is done, Graves said calmly. Let's move forward. We have a capable soldier here, and we can go home and apply his unusual talents to a new campaign. I hear there's a new colonized world in the Cerebrus system. And the locals can't agree who owns it. New contracts are our lifeblood. If we...
I can't let this go, Centurion,
the Primus said, cutting him off.
We're exposed here. Not just you and I. Not just Legion Varus. All of Earth is threatened by what McGill did. He's undisciplined and a danger to everyone. Most importantly, the Galactics think we executed him permanently. If they or the Nerbs figure out that didn't really happen...
I understand, Primus, Graves said, but they won't. The Galactic didn't forward a formal complaint up the chain. He conferred with us and witnessed his will being carried out. The event can be forgotten by all now.
The Primus shook her head slowly. Graves was frowning and the bio was smirking. I could see the problem as it grew. I had two enemies and one friend on a committee of three. Those were not good odds.
I'm afraid we'll have to err on the side of caution,
the Primus said. She looked at me coldly.
We appreciate your fighting skills, recruit. but you must be put down as initially ordered. Surely everyone here can see that. The risk for the Legion is too great otherwise. And may I say, speaking for all of Varus, that you have our condolences. Now, let's put the matter to a vote.
I vote nay, said Graves immediately.
The Primus turned to Centurion Thompson. She managed not to grin.
The situation is unfortunate, but I must agree with the Primus on this occasion. I vote yea. I also vote yea, said the Primus. A verdict has been reached. The accused shall be...
I want to appeal the verdict, I said quickly.
Appeal?
Asked the Primus. She seemed amused.
We're light years out in space. We're no longer orbiting Cancri IX. Every hegemony law states we have full jurisdiction. We, meaning the officers of Legion Varus. There is no higher body to appeal to.
I was sweating now, but determined. I wish to appeal to the Tribune, I said. Graves gave me a slight nod of approval. He lowered his head and quietly worked his tapper. The faces of the two women darkened. The Primus paused, seemingly to consider my appeal. She took a deep breath, heaved a sigh, and said,
No, I'm sorry. There is merit in your request. However...
Excuse me, Primus, said Graves. I'm sorry as well, but I've already relayed the request to the Tribune.
You did what?
I assume since this is a capital issue, an appeal would be automatically honored. I'm sorry if I overstepped my authority. I simply wanted to get the case concluded quickly. Should I message the Tribune and rebuff him? He has expressed interest in the matter.
He wants to join us? When?
Immediately.
The Primus stared at Graves, and he stared back at her. Although she didn't glare at him, I could tell she was highly displeased.
All right, then, she said. We'll do it your way. We'll wait for the Tribune.
We didn't have to wait long. The Tribune showed up within a few minutes. I was impressed. Graves had to have a lot of pull to get the man down here from the command desk so fast. After all, the Tribune had several Primus-level subordinates and over 50 Centurions to worry about. As a recruit, I was almost beneath notice. The Tribune looked small compared to Graves and I, but he carried himself with quiet confidence. You could tell he was in charge of the situation the moment he stepped into the room. He didn't answer the chorus of greetings from the officers. Instead, he looked at me, Graves, then the Primus. He nodded, as if confirming a suspicion.
"Don't let me stop you," he said, taking a seat at the side of the oval table.
"Carry on."
There was a moment of uncomfortable silence as Primus Turov cleared her throat, worked on a tapper, and shuffled a computer scroll that was stretched out on the table in front of her.
"Well, we've been discussing the fate of recruit James McGill. Really, it's an embarrassing situation."
"Embarrassing for whom?" asked the Tribune.
"For Legion Varus at large, I would say. This man killed a galactic, one of a species we'd never encountered. What a grim first contact that was for all involved. He was subsequently sentenced to be executed for his crimes. The galactic involved witnessed the proceedings and left satisfied. No further charges have been filed in the matter by the galactic, fortunately."
The Tribune had begun to frown, and now his frown had deepened.
"Let me see if I understand you. A galactic was murdered by one of our troops?"
"Yes."
"And why was I not informed of this diplomatic breach?"
The Primus cleared her throat.
"We handled it as quickly and quietly as we could. It was an accident, after all, and the galactic in question was not permed. He was offended but mollified by my quick action."
I repeat, why was I not informed?
The matter is complex and not easy to...
Enough, said the Tribune. The Primus looked shocked at being shut down, and her voice trailed off. The Tribune turned to Graves. Explain what happened, Centurion.
The situation played out essentially as Primus Turov explained.
Why was I not informed?
I assumed the Primus was operating with your approval. I had no idea she had not informed you, sir.
If looks could kill, the Centurion would have been struck dead by the Primus's eyes. But he seemed to take no notice of her and feigned great interest in his tapper.
I have a recording of the proceedings involving the Galactics here, sir.
Graves said,
should I transfer the video to your account?
By all means. Primus Turov, who'd been angry, now looked alarmed.
You recorded the interchange?
All trials are recorded. It is standard procedure.
This wasn't a formal trial. It was a very delicate matter, one which I handled to the satisfaction of everyone.
The Tribune looked annoyed. Already his tapper was receiving the video. He reviewed it while the rest of us sat in stony silence.
Hmm,
he said, nodding his head. He turned to me. I see you weren't satisfied by the verdict, recruit. You attacked your superiors in the final moments. I was still standing at attention. I was taken by surprise, sir. I felt I was the one under attack and threat of death. I took what I saw as appropriate action. The Tribune nodded again. Appropriate action. Just as you did when you met up with the Galactic, huh? Also, another thing occurs to me. Why are you standing here talking to me if you were executed days ago? The Primus leaned forward, seeing an opportunity.
That's why we are here, sir. Centurion Graves took it upon himself to revive this murderer, defying my orders.
Murderer? Asked the Tribune. I've heard that term tossed about liberally today. What makes this man a murderer?
First he killed the Galactic,
she said, ticking off her fingers.
Then he attempted to kill me when I ordered him executed. Finally, he murdered this Centurion from the bio unit.
Centurion Thompson? Ah, now I see why you're present. He murdered you?
Yes,
she said angrily. I was becoming angry myself. In my mind, I hadn't murdered anyone. I opened my mouth and began to make a retort, but Centurion Graves jumped into the conversation.
If I may, sir,
he said. He held his hand up toward me, and I shut up. It wasn't easy, but he had been my superior for some time now, and I managed to control myself.
This committee has already ruled the demise of Centurion Thompson to be a case of self-defense, as she was threatening him with deadly force.
Is that true? The Tribune asked Thompson. She looked offensive.
I don't actually recall. My mind wasn't backed up. The fact is, I died at his hands.
And so you wanted him permed?
I want justice to be done. This man is dangerous.
The Tribune eyed me seriously. You know what I see here? I see a natural-born killer. A man who takes action without hesitation. A man who defeats his enemies and defeats death with regularity. He held up his hand to stop the protests that had begun. We need people like James McGill. Don't you two see that? Legion Varus is a rough outfit. Many have tried to tame this Legion, and all have failed. I'm displeased with all of you, except for the recruit. It is your job to guide and nurture the natural attributes of the recruits Earth sends us, not to perm anyone who annoys you. Let me remind you that we need people who think outside the box. people who win against the odds. Everyone was silent for a moment. The Tribune stood up and began to pace. He put his hands behind his back and walked around the room, passing behind the other officers. Even Graves looked uncomfortable. "I'm overturning your ruling, Primus. But against my better judgment, I will not demote you. Not this time."
"What? Demote me? What possible—"
"Not for perming a promising recruit. That's bad, but insignificant compared to your other violations of Legion policy. You did not inform me of the incident with the Galactic. That kind of matter is beyond your office. Hell, it's beyond mine as well. I should really inform Hegemony." Primus Turov met his eyes. She nodded as if in sudden understanding.
"But you won't inform Hegemony, will you?"
"No," he said. "And that's why I'm letting you off. The shitstorm would be tremendous. I feel the same reluctance you must have felt to kick it upstairs. I'm going to bury it, and you will all swear to bury it with me."
"Consider it done, sir,"
Graves said. The other officers agreed quickly, but then their eyes all fell together upon me. I shrugged. "What Galactic? I don't remember any such thing." I'd meant it as a joke, but they all nodded seriously.
"Keep in mind," the Tribune continued, "despite our silence, this might not be the end of it. The Galactics often pause for a long time, even years, before deciding to proceed on an issue. The Empire is unbelievably vast. There are more layers of bureaucracy than we can even imagine. Our best scholars and contact specialists tell us their decision-making process is slow and ponderous. But it is also very thorough. Just because they haven't raised the issue yet doesn't mean we're in the clear."
"Perhaps we should carry out the original sentence properly,"
the Primus said, seeing an opportunity.
I felt my gut twist. The woman wanted to see me dead at all costs.
The Tribune shook his head.
"It won't matter. Galactic law doesn't work that way. No legal system does. You can't shoot someone and then throw away the gun, hoping that simple act will absolve you of your crime. The Galactics think of humanity as a single entity. Anything done by any member of our species inflicts guilt upon all the rest. The charges will be against all Earth, not an individual, if they come." The meeting adjourned on that troubling note, and we each went our separate ways. We exited the ship months later, riding lifters down into the atmosphere. Coming home on leave was strange. We carried our rucks to the terminal, where we were surprised by a waiting throng of relatives and friends. My parents hugged me, and my mom cried. It was strange to see them again. I'd been out in space nearly a year. How could I go back to sleeping on their couch after I'd been killed over and over again on another world? I decided in the end I'd just do it. That's how you returned home. You just did it. Thinking too much was never a good idea when dramatic changes were thrown at you. None of the old friends I'd left behind had ever heard of Legion Varus, but they were impressed anyway. They were even more impressed when I told them stories of battling lizards, dying in combat, and breathing canned air for a year. Everyone knew about Cankri Nine. They'd all played the game Steel World, and they couldn't believe I'd fought there for real. After a few days, squaddies from my unit began to contact me. We all had similar problems. We felt the disconnect with our families and old friends. Carlos put it best, I thought.
"They're all a bunch of wannabes and lamers."
Yeah, that was about right.
I met him at a bar in Philly, and we drank like we were still aboard ship. A few others joined us, including Natasha, and for a time it was like we'd never been apart.
"How long do you think we have?"
I asked, finally, breaking the jovial mood for everyone.
They stopped laughing and stared into their beer mugs.
I heard they have a new contract already, Natasha said. They're just dickering about the price.
I nodded, having heard the same thing. Legion Varus always had a job to do out in space. There was always another mess to be cleaned up, another rival to be put down. I wondered where I would be next year. Since the question was impossible to answer, I upended my brew and guzzled it all down. The end.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Dust World, Book 2 in the Undying Mercenaries series free.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production of Steel World, written by B.V. Larson, narrated by Mark Boyette, producer Mike Charzik, copyright 2013 by B.V. Larson, production copyright 2013 by Audible Inc.
And now a free preview of Dust World, Book 2 in the Undying Mercenaries series.
Earth meets Galactic Empire, a timeline of events. 1922, radio broadcasting sweeps Earth, becoming the first of many forms of streaming transmissions that reach out into space at the speed of light. 1943, Imperial Galactic outposts pick up a growing tide of transmissions from Earth. They open a case file and launch a study. 1947, a rash of UFO sightings is recorded on Earth as the investigation by the Galactics begins. 1969, NASA lands two men on the moon, taking humanity's first step into the cosmos. The alarming advance is reported to Galactic Central. 1977, Voyager 1 is launched on a mission to explore beyond the limits of the solar system. 1993, the European Union is formed, becoming the first of many multinational conglomerations to follow. 1995, the first exoplanet is discovered circling 51 Pegasi, a main sequence star. Thousands more discoveries soon follow. 2012, Voyager 1 becomes the first man-made object to travel outside the solar system. The violation is carefully noted by galactic observers. 2025, worldwide economic collapse hastens the formation of multiple political blocs and increased nationalism. China, the EU, and the North American Collective, NAC, enter a new Cold War era. 2041, Earth's first and only colony ship, Hydra, is launched toward Zeta Herculis. The colonists are primarily political exiles from the NAC. 2052, having detected humanity's rise in technological prowess and various violations in conduct, the Galactic Empire is compelled to act. Local Battle Fleet 921 is dispatched to the solar system and galactic rule is established. 2054, on Earth, cultural shock gives way to acceptance. The former rival political blocs form sector governments underneath a central hegemony government, which in turn is ruled by the distant galactics. 2058, Earth's first mercenary legion, Victrix, executes two successful missions during their initial year of operation, bringing home much-needed galactic credits and proving Earth is a viable new member of the Empire. 2076, Legion Varus is formed to handle clandestine off-world missions. 2081, an outbreak of rebellious factions in Brasilia sector is put down. 7 million are killed in the subsequent purge. 2099, James McGill is born. 2121, McGill joins Legion Varus. During his first tour, he is instrumental in ending all mercenary contracts with Cancri 9, a disaster that is later ruled to be unavoidable. Earth subsequently enters an economic downward spiral. 2122. Hydra, Earth's one and only colony mission, finally reports to the homeworld. The colonization of another star system has been achieved, but it is a violation of galactic law. Legion Varus is dispatched to handle the situation. The slain care little if they sleep or rise again. Aeschylus, 479 B.C. Chapter 1. Right from the start, I didn't enjoy my 4 months of shore leave. The veterans and adjuncts told us that after a year of blood and hard living, we were bound to have trouble settling back into our old lives. The Legion Sykes gave us a short speech about disconnection problems before we were released and sent marching down the gangplanks into Newark Spaceport, and they suggested we should contact the Legion if we felt we needed help. I laughed that off, went home to Georgia on the Sky train, and then endured the cubicle party my parents threw for me in our Habs rec room. A dozen neighbors and friends had gathered, so I glued a smile on my face. All the while, I wanted nothing more than to get away from everybody. For the next few weeks, I think I was in shock. Civilian life didn't seem fun to me anymore. The first chance I got, I hunted down Carlos and some of the others from my unit. We got seriously drunk. That felt good, but it only lasted for a few hours. Staggering home again, I awakened to find my mom making me breakfast. I ate it, threw it up in the bathroom, then ate some more.
"You want to talk about it, James?"
she asked.
"No," I said. "I'm fine." "Getting things off your chest can really help."
I looked at her, and she forced a smile. I could see the worry in her face, and it bugged me. "Telling war stories won't help anything," I said. She dropped her eyes to stare at the floor, and she hugged me briefly.
"You should try to get back into your old routines," she said.
I did as she suggested for the next month or so. I tried to fall back into my old habits, but I felt disconnected from gaming buddies, old girlfriends from school, and even my own parents. It wasn't all me, I could tell that. Oh, sure, people I knew smiled at me whenever I came around. They patted my back and fed me sandwiches, a few even bought me drinks. But when they looked at me, they stared a little too long. There was darkness in their eyes while they did it, too. They could see something in me, something different. There was a distance between me and everyone else, a separation. It took me a while to figure out what it was. "You aren't sure that I really am James McGill," I said to my dad suddenly one Thursday night in June. "What?" he asked, startled. He'd been lying on his back watching a streaming ball game on the ceiling. It was the only flat surface large enough in our tiny apartment for a big screen. He adjusted his recliner and it pushed him up into a vertical position. He paused the game. "What did you say, son?"
"I can't blame you for not knowing who I am," I said. "Sometimes I'm not entirely sure myself."
My dad gave me a small, nervous chuckle. "I don't know what you're talking about, James."
"Let me spell it out for you. By my count, I'm on my fourth body. I'm not in the skin I was born with, Dad. Do you get that? I died out there in space. I died and was reborn with a fresh body built from alien slime."
Another nervous chuckle from him, and his eye twitched a little. It hadn't been a wink, I was certain of that.
"Sure," I continued. "I look like the old James. I have his familiar laugh. I have the same hair. I like the same brand of beer. And I can still kick most people's ass in an online shooter whenever I bother to log in."
My dad stared at me for another long second, then he straightened up. "You're my kid," he said firmly. "You're still my kid, I'm certain about that." I smiled.
"Thanks, Dad. But I'm undeniably different. You have to admit that."
"You've grown up, that's all. You've been out to the stars.
People always have trouble coming home after being in a war. That's been true throughout history. Maybe you should contact the Legion. Maybe the bio people can help. I snorted.
Yeah,
I said. They'll give me a shot of something. They'll bleed me and order me to piss in cups until I run dry. And if I don't like what they find, you know what they'll do?
My dad shook his head slowly. They'll kill me again, that's what.
I'll be recycled, hoping for a better grow.
Dad looked horrified.
I don't understand.
I stopped him with a raised hand. I had never told my family about what really happened when you died and came back. I'd skipped all that. It wasn't clean, and I suddenly felt bad for burdening my father with all this crap. I'm sorry, Dad. I'm going for a walk.
Wait, he said, jumping up out of his chair and grabbing my arm. I looked at him. There's something else. You've got the wrong idea. You haven't been watching the news, have you?
I frowned, shaking my head. My dad sucked in his breath.
People aren't thinking about how you died. They don't think of you as some kind of zombie. You can forget all about that. We don't think like that because we haven't experienced it. What we're wondering is just what your Legion did out there, son.
It was my turn to look confused. My dad pointed to the ceiling.
Notice how we stream games and junk all the time. We don't want to watch the news. No one does. People are scared, James. That's what's wrong with them.
Scared? Why?
Because Cankri 9 has dropped our contracts. They canceled them all. Germanica, Solstice, Victrix. No one is flying out there to work anymore. The news agencies aren't saying why, but they do often mention that Legion Varus was the last to serve on Steel World.
I felt a sudden squeeze in my guts. This was much worse than being feared as a member of the Walking Dead. I thought things were bad before, but now I was beginning to get the real picture. This wasn't about me. Not exactly.
You're telling me that everyone thinks Legion Varus screwed up? That we somehow pissed off the princes and lost our best interstellar trading client?
He nodded slowly. I let out a sigh that left me empty.
They're right, in a way, I said. But they're also wrong. There was nothing we could have done to keep those contracts from getting canceled, Dad.
What happened out there? He asked me, his voice barely above a whisper.
I almost told him the truth then, but I stopped myself. We weren't supposed to talk about it. Legion Varus didn't have as many rules on conduct as most legions did, but secrecy in the area of mercenary contracts was definitely one of them.
I can't talk about that.
But believe me, the dinos on Cankri 9 were going to screw us one way or another. They were never Earth's friends.
Dad nodded slowly.
Okay. I hope knowing the truth makes you feel better.
Yeah, sure, I said, trying to laugh it off. People think my Legion ruined the planet's economy single-handedly? That's a lot better than thinking I'm a freak.
No, he said. It's not ruined. Sure, we're in for some hard times. Some belt tightening is overdue, that's all.
I reached for the vid controller, which rested on the table next to Dad's recliner. I flipped it to the news, to the financial browsing section. I climbed into a chair beside my father's and stretched out on it. My dad quietly reclined his chair again, and we stared at the ceiling together. I watched vid after vid. They were all the same. Planet-wide, we were going into a recession. At least that's what the suits called it, but the more excitable people called it a crash. The more they talked, the more I became concerned. Companies and governments were announcing shortages, rationings, and layoffs everywhere. District governments, sector governments, and even hegemony had declared budget shortfalls and were listing their proposed cutbacks. All alien tech commodities were off limits for civilian purchase. Every galactic credit on Earth had to be wrapped up into something they called a relief fund.
I had to wonder who was going to feel relieved. My mom showed up then, returning from the store in the middle of a streaming netcast that showed idle legionaries sitting on park benches in